Hello and welcome to Tongues of Fire, Pastor Paul's podcast. Today is Sunday, April 6th, 2008. This is episode 41.
I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for long, long years, stolen many a man's soul and faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and faith. I made damn sure that Pilate washed his hands and sealed his fate. St. Petersburg, when I saw it was time for a change, I killed the Tsar and his ministers. Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a general's rank, when the blitzkrieg raged and the bodies stank. With glee while your kings and queens fought for 10 decades for the gods they made. I shouted out, who killed the Kennedys? Well, after all, it was you and me. Let me please introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste, and I lay traps for
nice to meet you.
Hello and welcome to Tongues of Fire, Pastor Paul's podcast. This is episode 41, No Hearts. Did you recognize the tune? Did you recognize the tune? Pleased to meet you, but what's puzzling you is the nature of my game. A man of wealth and taste. Couple hints for you. Song's been around a while. Yes, you guessed it. The symphonic music of the Rolling Stones' Sympathy for the Devil. Mr. D. So this song I thought was pretty appropriate since the name of this podcast is No Hearts. And Pastor Paul's message is about Judas and the priests. So I thought what was quite funny was that in that song, you're asked to give the devil sympathy. But if you remember in one of our earlier podcasts, the Tears podcast, remember when Jesus looked at the daughters of Jerusalem and he said, "Weep for yourselves." So I thought that was pretty cool. Weep for yourselves. So Jesus was not looking for any sympathy. And I will just leave it at that. Let's see. You can go to the show notes. I will post all of the links that we talk about in the show notes, and that is www.pastorpaul.blogspot.com. So be sure to go there. And then also you can go to our website, which is www.pastorpaul.org. So go there and you'll see a lot of different links. I just had to look up to see if my mic was turned on. Yes, it is. I just did a whole thing with no mic. So there you go. That's podcasting. Anyways, getting back, where were we? Yes, go to www.pastorpaul.org, and there you will see a lot of information about Pastor Paul's mission and what we do in Minneapolis. Oh, by the way, I am your hostess with the mostess, Janine Arnopoulos. And where am I coming to you from? Somewhere in the United States, somewhere in north of the in the United States, very north, somewhere where there's a lot of snow in the winter. Yeah, Minnesota. So there you go. Are we fooling around, wasting time? What are we on, 3 minutes? I'm going to have to speed it up. Okay. We took a lot of time with our song, but you just had to hear that song. That is a good one, and it fits this message, and you will like this message. It's about Judas. Pastor Paul talks about how we can see ourselves in Judas, and it's just a really good message. So you want to listen up for that. What else? You can call the comment line, but I don't think any of you will. Maybe you'll surprise me. Call the comment line. I dare you. 1-715-808-0318. Double dare. 1-715-808-0318. So call me there or send me an email, janine@pastorpaul.org. Although I will have to say this right now, my email situation, I've never been one to do email. I'm not an email person. Isn't that, of course, I'm not actually a computer person or a web person or a podcaster, or I don't know who I am. I am just here. This is a total faith mission right now, okay? How I'm here doing what I'm doing is amazing, okay? Let me just say that right now. I'll say it again. Truly amazing. But I am having fun, although today I'm having bit of a hard time, very tough day, technically speaking, trying to upload podcasts, trying to do all kinds of things that I don't even know what I'm doing. So totally a faith situation here. Anyways, where were we? I got off on that tangent. Okay. Oh, email. That's right. Email. I have got just so much junk that you would be better off to call the comment line, really. And if you don't want to post it, if you just want to like talk, go ahead. Just say, don't post this, but here, I just want to tell you this. You know, I enjoyed your music. I didn't enjoy your music. It's too long, blah, 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 blah. Spit it out. Just say it the way it is. And for all of you secret listeners out there, yes, the secret listeners, same thing. Just, you can do an anonymous 715 if you want. That's fine. I don't need to know who you are, really. Although, it may puzzle me as to the nature of your game. So, you should spell it out pretty clearly. And when you go to www.pastorpaul.org, up at the top of the homepage, you will see some interactive links to our blog, which is www.pastorpaul.blogspot.com. That's where the show notes are. And on occasion, I will post to the blog. And I should be doing some posting coming up. Tomorrow is our big day. shop.org. Maybe I'll do something different and I'll post something current on the blog instead of waiting for a year to post about something. But you never know. Flickr. Post some pictures on Flickr. Oh, there we have 3 pictures of Pastor Paul on Flickr. So, I mean, you got to start somewhere, right? The podcast. This is the podcast. So, you're here right now. You can subscribe to the podcast and it'll be sent to you or Twitter. Be sure to join Twitter. All right, that's all I have for you. Listen to the podcast and come back on Friday. This is episode number 41. You've got it. No hearts. Have a good week. We'll see you Friday. Bye.
Today's message is entitled, No Hearts. And again, we'll look at other faces surrounding the cross. And I found myself in each one from the best to the worst. Last week, we looked at Simon, a black man who was compelled, it says, to carry the cross. And what he hated at first, he later on took pride in. Today, let's look in on Matthew 27 and 4. It is your affair, not ours. I read that and I thought, you know, those words sound so familiar to me. They're as fresh as our last excuse or our last alibi or our last dodge. Our last, and the Bible talks about this, our last, could you please excuse me from the feast? I can't come. I just got married and I got to go home and check my wife out. And I never have seen a woman that didn't like to go out and eat. They were offered to go to a feast. Or I bought a cow and I must go home and check out its hoofs. Kind of late in the game, wouldn't you say? I just bought some land and I must go check it out. And it's in the evening, you can't see a thing. And I thought, strange how people can lie when put in an awkward position, bend the truth. But also I thought, this is as old as sin. It is your affair, not ours. Do you kids ever say that? Well, I didn't do it. It was him. That's his affair. I didn't do it. And I think these are the cruelest words used in connection with a crucifixion. And many words were used. But I think this, and I can really identify with this, it is your affair and not ours. We don't want anything to do with it. It's your affairs and not ours. Not only are these words cruel, but false. And I think lies like these are twice as deadly. destructive to those who utter them and to those to whom they are spoken. Now, you probably recognize already these words are part of the tragic story of Judas's betrayal of the Lord. And I have to relate with him. Let's try to relate with him today. In his mixed, mingled mind, his motives of greed, envy, jealousy, hate, love, and frustration caused him to throw Jesus to the religious wolf pack, the long robes. But after that the deed is done, comes the rude awakening. Have you ever had a rude awakening? I was looking at those storms and I thought, now they're assessing the damage. A storm was going on. They didn't know how much damage was done until the storm was over. And I thought he must have looked afterwards and said, what have I done? And a terrible reaction sets in. Can you be with him for a time? A terrible reaction sets in. And he sees these legal long robes for what they really are. Petty and cruel and self-serving. The Bible says that he runs back to the long robes. I'm talking about the priests. And he flings at their feet 30 pieces of silver. Like giving it back would ease his tormenting conscience. Have you ever said in your life, oh, I wish I never would have done that. If only I could just pay back and just forget the whole thing. How many have had that experience? But his terrible guilt doesn't leave his body when he throws down the cash. It's with him. I have sinned, he sobs, in that I have betrayed innocent blood. And what do the long robes, the priests, answer this tormented man? Do they console this desperate soul? Do they say, well, you know, look at it this way, you did God a favor. Or you're a hero, my man, you're a hero. No, they answer with a heartless lie. It is your affair and not ours. You put your own foot in your own mouth. Now you live with it. It's not our affair. Well, I tell you, lies are pretty tricky, aren't they? You know why? Every lie has a dash of truth in it. You know why that is? To give it power. To give it credibility. You ever talk to someone, you know they're telling a lie, but there's enough truth in it that you can't quite pin it down. I mean, every lie must be coated in truth, like some bad-tasting medicines. You pass it quickly before the coating wears off and starts to dissolve in your own mouth, and you're stuck with it. No, I know this, that in order to be effective, a lie must have a degree of truth in it. Lawyers do this all the time. Bend the truth, twist the truth, tell the truth in a lie, and a lie in the truth. Banks do it. And then they pass it along quickly, give it instant power by numbers. And the insurance companies in Wall Street, and they start some kind of a lie, some kind of a rumor, and everybody quick goes down and sells and loses, and somebody wins. See, because we're prone to believe a lie, aren't we? Because of our fear. And oh well, just people, we do it all the time. So this declaration of the priest has real truth in it. And even Judas must admit this. Well, I thought, what is their truth in this hellish word? This is it. It is your affair. The treachery of Judas was his own affair. And he had to admit that they were right in saying that. I mean, his guilt was terribly personal. I think sin is always fearfully individual, isn't it? Come right down to it. Can you share your guilt with anybody else? Oh, I feel so guilty. And can you share some of this guilt? No. No, folks. I mean, this is because we all have a choice. He really didn't have to betray his master. He was under no, let's say, compulsion. Some say, and I talked to many different people on this, and some say that Judas was created for this work, a devil, let's say, incarnate. Now I say to that, it's very, very false, because I can see my very self in that. See, because he would have no guilt, because you could say, well, he's not responsible. Then no one would be responsible. They were just fashioned to do that thing, and that's the way it was supposed to be. He was supposed to go up and shoot four people in the head that day or whatever. We could say, God made me do it. That was supposed to happen. No, he was no monster. He was simply a man. Just like us. Free to make his own choices. Now I think before he came to this very tragic choice, he had made smaller choices all the way down the line that sort of set the scene for his own self-destruction. I mean, I believe this was the sum total of many yesterdays of wrong choices. Don't we all do that? Don't we day by day start out and have wrong choices, just little ones? And we make that wrong choice, and we make that next choice, and we make that next choice. Or we choose not to talk to somebody one day, and it grows into a week and a month or whatever. And so the resulting guilt was his very own, very personal. Couldn't shake it. I think this is always the case when we make wrong choices. Did you ever notice we always speak of my house and my land and my car and my wife and my family, my friends, my whatever? But that these are only possessions, they're not really ours at all. Other people had them before we had them, and other people will have them when we're gone. You see, but our guilt is our very own. I'm reminded of the psalmist, and he says, my sin is ever before me. Now, I think there's a man that had spiritual eyes. But anyway, Judas was so lonely in his guilt. Don't you know that guilt is a lonely place, isn't it? Have you ever done something and you did somebody in, and then you're stuck with that guilt, and you're in some place and you can hear all the voices and everything, but you're not paying it. You're stuck with that guilt. Huh? Have you ever felt that way? And then they're talking and having fun, but you're thinking about this thing you did, and you're thinking, oh, God, you can't enjoy yourself. No, it's terribly personal. How many are hearing this message today? Hope some of you people are listening on that tape will hear it. Yeah. Lonely, 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 lonely place to be. He felt like he was the only man that had ever sinned. Yeah, have you ever felt like that? That you were the only man that ever sinned? And that's how Judas felt. Have you ever been in that lonely place? Anybody? Well, if you say you're without sin, you're a liar and there's no truth in you, so you've been in that place. Funny how we even like to lie about that, don't we? You listening to the tape, sometimes, you know, you might call in and say, well, I just didn't appreciate. Well, maybe you got convicted. Not looking to belong to a popularity club. God knows I wouldn't be down here if I was. Say amen, somebody. But he was so lonely in his guilt. Oh, what a place to be. I saw a movie one time where there were 100 men, and this man had done a terrible thing, and they locked him up, and there were 100 men that wanted to tear him out of the cell out there, and they kept after the sheriff, let him out. They went, and so they tore the bars right off of the window with a couple of team of horses, and they went in there, and they commenced to beat this man to death with sticks. And it showed them beating this man with sticks on and on. It lasted. I think they overdid it. I mean, they could have shown a 2-minute scene, but it lasted for 5 minutes. Probably was more truth in it, though. And they beat him till there was nothing left at all. And it showed the lives of these 100 men, and some went on with their lives. It didn't bother them too much, and some had bothered a little bit, and some made excuses for it. But one man could not live with it. Night after night, it haunted him. It's a terrible thing. He was stuck with that guilt. Even though there were 100 people, he couldn't take like 1/100th of the guilt. He took it all on himself. You know why? Because that guilt was very personal. So sometimes when we do things in a group, or we vote something in, or we vote something out, or we say, well, good enough for him. Well, I wasn't the only one. You are the only one when God deals with you. Well, you know, I don't think anybody would hold it against you and your group down there from just quitting the mission. I mean, there's a lot of us that feel that way, Pastor. We really do. Yeah, but then you wouldn't be stuck with the guilt, would you? Or then again, probably you would, because you'd be the one that was causing it to happen. You think about that, folks. Anyway, he couldn't live with it, and finally he went the way of Judas, and he went out and he killed himself. Could not live with what 100 men had done, and he was part of it. Could not justify his action. I wonder sometimes how governments and leaders can go ahead and justify it. Well, no matter how many people are involved in a sin, it always finds each one out individually, separately. Bible says, be sure your sin will find you out. When we see people that are misused and say nothing, we're guilty. Well, it's none of my business. It's not of ours, it's yours, you know. When reputations are ruined, when character assassinations are going on and we say nothing, it's your affair and not ours. We didn't do anything, they did it. Right, I answer. You said it. You didn't do anything. But anyway, your guilt will come. And it will come probably at night. It'll come probably when you're sitting someplace with friends. And something will bring that into the focus there. That although that you weren't personally involved, you had a chance to do something and you didn't do it. Knowing to do good and doing it not, the Bible says, is sin. Isn't there a song like that? Well, sleep won't come the whole night through. Your guilty heart will tell on you. Then probably you'll say, you know, I should have said something. Why didn't I say something? I feel like such a wimp. Well, hey, it was none of your business, your friends say. Someone assures you. There's always somebody, oh, don't feel bad. Hey, you couldn't have done nothing about it. Does that make you feel any better? For about 30 seconds, and then you're still sitting there with yourself. I mean, everybody's doing it. They all said it. But you're still stuck. That friend cannot assure you out of your personal guilt. It's no use for you to try to talk your way out. If you're guilty, you're guilty, and that is it. So anyway, when the priests tell Judas, it is your affair, he knows that they're speaking a very somber, sober truth. But again, if there is truth in that statement, there is also a terrible lie. Where there, I think their answer is false, is in these two little words. Listen to these two little words. We use them all of the time, not ours. When they pass the guilt off and on to Judas, they are just affirming what he already knows. Well, he knows that. He knows he's guilty. That's like saying, how do you plead? We ask this half-crazy man. The legalists are good at that. And here he stands, this Judas, with white lips. I mean, he's just totally wasted. Have you ever been totally wasted? And wide eyes and shuffling walk. A sort of a mental and nervous hands. Well, what is his answer going to be? Guilty is his answer to our stupid question. You know you're wrong, don't you? He's already said, hey, I'm guilty. Well, does this guilt then cancel out the long robe's guilt? No. Does his confession clear them? No. And if it were today, and they put it in the paper that he had confessed to the whole thing and put no one else in this frame, would they be free? No. Maybe in their legal minds they think they can pass it off, but it cannot be done. It is impossible. They are as guilty whether they will admit it or not. And you know what? They're going to die that way. They did die that way. They're as guilty as he is, and they're going to die that way, whether they admit it or not. Why is that true? Because Judas is in the same family they are. They are part of each other. Oh my God, if we'd only learn that. God hath made of one blood all the nations to dwell upon the face of the earth. We are brothers one another by God's divine choice. We are part of one another. Isn't this true when we turn away from nations? I mean, I'm saying there is such a thing as solidarity of race, however we may seek to ignore it. There is only one human race, but we just choose to ignore that. We are part of one another, whether we will admit it or not. And we choose to ignore that. I mean, if our country ignores other countries when they're in terrible plights, we're ignoring ourselves. And when we ignore people in our own country from the other side of the tracks, so to speak, do we not do that? Do we not ignore people from the other side of the tracks? Can you say it's your affair and not ours? We do. You listening to this tape? We most certainly do. When people are homeless and when people are jobless, hey, this is none of our affair. It's your affair, not ours. We didn't put you in this situation. We didn't put you in the situation that you got through high school and you cannot read and write and do simple mathematics. It's not our affair. Whose affair is it? Now we're going to find out that it's everybody's affair when the country just winds out because there's just a whole lot of idiots that, because people never gave them any love. They can't learn. Nobody cared enough. It's not our affair. Ta-ra, ta-la. Woo, and I hope that you listening are getting my point today. It is very much your affair. When people are living in positive dumps. I talked to a couple of women up at the run yesterday. And they had cameras up there when they were running the thing. And so I said, let me say something here. And I said my piece. I'm getting bold. When you get old, you get bold. You ain't got a whole lot of time to fence and fool around with things. You got to get it said before you drop over, you know. Whatever. And I asked a couple of women up there, I said, you know, I'm getting into a jobs program. Because I feel to get into a jobs program. Well, what's it going to pay? I said, it'll pay at least $550. And we'll bus you to the job and bus you back. I don't know how it's all going to work, but I'm going to put my whole heart into it. And I said, the reason I'm going to get into that, because I find there's a lot of people that got a stove with one burner that works and an oven that works sometimes and burns half the food half the time. And a refrigerator that doesn't refrigerate or doesn't freeze. And a bed that's up on bricks and it's so stained that the cockroaches left there about a year ago because they couldn't stand it. And so I think that we need to do something right now. I think it's something I have to. I can't say it's not my affair anymore. It is my affair. I take it personal. I take it personal. Somebody's got to start taking these things on and take them personal. Well, what do you care? It doesn't affect you. You better care. Are you hearing this? I mean, right down here on the north side in Minneapolis and over in that Selby Dale over there in St. Paul. I mean, a stone's throw away from the capital, the guilt capital. They're as guilty as any of us who say it's your affair and not ours. Who's going to be responsible? Who's going to be responsible when all the jobs are gone? Where have all the good jobs gone? All long time they've been gone. Who's going to be responsible?
Not me. I didn't do nothing. The cook, cook, cook. Oh.
Isn't that a stupid remark? I think it is. I've made it. I'm getting sick of myself. I ain't going to make it no more. Have you ever noticed how small the world is getting? Isn't it getting small? Now they have an airplane, a plane that can fly over there, an airship, rocket. You can get to Japan in 1 hour. It goes straight up and straight down. But even on TV, you know, you're only a TV button away from the world. You couch potatoes can beam in on your handheld clickers. And then again, you can beam right out again. Just as quickly, and you can be sighing in a bored voice, say, oh, it's not our affair. Bring the pretzels on. It's your affair, not ours. I don't want to see that junk. Isn't there anything good on TV? God, you realize what a non-caring world we have become. And what the result is that we're messing ourselves up by not caring. There's a price to be paid for neglect. And we are paying it right now. With that attitude, it's your affair, not ours. And so these priests, go back now, the priests are at a very stake in this deed. Because I'm saying they were of the same family. What hurt him would hurt them also. I think we have a very, very, very foolish, terribly foolish way of saying, I have a right to live my own life. What I do is no business of yours. What a lie. Well, Hitler said that in the beginning, didn't he? That is an untruth. It's false, I'm saying. What I do is your business because it either helps you or hurts you. And what you do is also my business for the very same reason. I mean, we are bound up in a bundle of life together. And your faithfulness helps me to be faithful. Your moral failure, by the same token, helps me to fail. No man liveth to himself. Look at drugs in the home. And look at AIDS. And look at neglect and abuse. And they all said, hey, I have a right to live my own life. What I do is my business. No, it affected a whole lot of people. Mom and dad should have made it their business. Hey, this is my business. This is my house. This is my neighborhood. This is my school. This is my workplace, wherever it may be, or whoever may be in that place. I mean, it's this trying to live in separate power groups that is so self-defeating. No man liveth to himself. And the destroying of things is when we have individual power groups and we don't know that we're being worked over and we don't know that we are one in the flesh. Whether we care to admit that or not. Everything that happens affects us. Let's say that you're continually driving while you're drunk. Slows down your reaction time. You're more reckless. You become stupid. Well, I was blind, stupid, drunk. You ever hear anybody say that? Well, it's the truth. See, then we are a danger to ourselves and to others. Hey, I'll do whatever I want to. And the guy's driving, you know, closing one eye and seeing eight cars coming at him. Oh, no, that isn't just your business. That's everybody that sees you. Oh, look at him. Isn't that awful? He's driving while drunk. Oh, well, I better mind my own. That is your business. Just down the street down there, there's a little kid coming out on the street. There he comes. Little tricycle goes up in the air. Well, it's none of your business. You're going to live with that. You had a chance to stop the man. Well, I mean, he's guilty as charged. They should just give him everything. Well, how about the situation that led up to this man being that way in the very first place? So, nobody wants to assume any responsibility for anybody else, and especially themselves, or where are you? And we sing, we are one in the Spirit. We are one in the Lord, huh? Yeah, but what kind of a spirit? I cannot therefore fail to mind my own business without failing to mind yours as well. And so anyway, the long robes had a stake in the crime of Judas because they were weakened by that crime themselves. They had helped to make Judas what he was. They were the role models. Oh my God, how we need role models. How many know we need role models? We need people that will step out, even from the inner circle of their little home, and go on out there and be a role model. Oh, well, I don't have time. I mean, the whole world is a mess. It's too late now, and the end is coming. Let's look up and wait for his return. And remember what he said about that in the Bible. They may have acted passively, and a lot of us do that, by creating an atmosphere in which loyalty was hard and disloyalty was made easy. See, we can create an atmosphere in our homes, have the atmosphere of being passive. Oh, he's going through a stage. Isn't that right? Debbie, isn't that right? Well, he's going through a stage, but you don't allow that, see, because you're involved. You're involved, them little ones there, see. It's like a mother came down, she says, oh, I have to go home because I just looked in my purse and the little one stole $40 out of there. And I have to go to school and have to retrieve it. So then she came back and says, well, you know, she's only 6 years old, so she didn't know it was wrong to take that. And kids tell her to do this and that, and so she just does it. I said, she knew enough to hide it from you. Well, I says, you keep right on being passive like that. This ain't going to do you no good. And I says, I'm going to make it my business because just by my age here, I'm going to give you a little advice here. Don't allow that to start to happen at 6 years old. Maybe they created an atmosphere where it's easy. Oh, hey, Judas. I mean, Judas Priest. Go ahead. Are we guilty of that? I think so. When we don't care and we're sitting around and we make an atmosphere where it's easy for drugs. Or it's easy to drink. I venture to say, if everybody that had a drinking problem, if they got locked outside, I mean, a lot of them would say, let me in. Let me in. It's zero out here. I'm cold. Let me in. No, you're not coming in till you sober up. Till you go to the drunk tank. See, we make it so easy. The atmosphere is lackadaisical. Maybe that was the atmosphere they had created, sort of a passive, well, hey. Huh? I mean, that happens in our state even, then that happens in the welfare system. Do we make it easy or profitable or smart to be true and loyal? Oh, no. I think we create an atmosphere definitely for people to be disloyal. Crime pays. I heard a guy say that on TV. Crime pays, it really does. I got money socked all over the world. It pays, you bet. Did you ever notice when they show these mop Godfather 3 and they play these violins and act like it's some kind of a great big deal? These people were murderers. My boy, come from me, you know, and they make it so easy and they glorify all this. But did you ever think about all the people that got shot down innocently? Where are their rights? Well, we make it easy because we glorify all that. We love that kind of stuff. Making it too easy by being passive. But then again, some of the priests were more than passive participants. They had been active, not only active, they had been aggressive. They had offered Judas a reward for his crime. They responded when he asked, "What's it worth to you for me to do this?" What they did, they actually bought Judas as a hitman and made him a traitor and a murderer. They were guilty as guilty could be, period. And by the same token, we too have a stake in the burdens and failures and sins of our fellow men. We have a stake in it. I mean, is it so hard to admit that? I mean, that's why, you know, a lot of times I think we're kind of guilt-ridden with little things. We don't even know what it is, a little nagging, guilty, because we're not responsible citizens. We know to do good sometimes, and we don't do it, and we're always blaming it on the government, and we're blaming it on this and the area, and we blame it on, let's see, who can I put the blame on me, boy? I'll put the blame on me, huh? I mean, put the blame on somebody. But we're always looking for a way out instead of a way into a problem. Jesus came into the world. I mean, we're talking problems, folks. Don't we have a stake in them? I mean, we're part of them. Is not Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Osseo, Columbia Heights, Lake Street, Richfield, Bloomington part of this metropolis, part of this city? Does driving 15 minutes or 20 minutes from here, does that make you not a part of it? No, you are a part of it, and it'll come back to haunt you. You listening to this tape. You are as part of this as the priest. You're guilty as the priest. So if one member suffers, don't all the members suffer with it? That's what it means in the Bible, you know. You got a bad arm here, okay? And so your whole body has to take up the slack. The left arm has to do more work, and you have to lift this way, or even one finger when it gets bad. I always hit that. And so the rest of the body takes care of it, doesn't it? Isn't that the way it's supposed to be in brotherhood, world brotherhood, melting? They talk about melting pot. I'm talking about we have something in common here with the whole world. We are of one blood. God made us all one blood. We're all responsible for everybody else's ills in some way. Well, yeah, but I think the government and the care packages and so on like that and so on should do good. We're all responsible. You're responsible. You're responsible and you're responsible and you're responsible. I'm just using you. But I mean, you're all responsible. Well, I don't care. You know, when you act like a nerd at home, you make it mean for everybody else because I want to be like a nerd. I am going to... And so everybody has to put up with the person because they want. And so you got to look at them at the dinner table. And you got to look at them in the morning. Huh? And you got to go to bed with these people. And you got, huh? I mean, because they make it rough for the whole family. Hey, moms and dads, it is your business. Hey, we got three other kids in this family. So if you want to act like that, well then, so long it's been good to know you, so long it's been good to know you, huh? Well, we make the atmosphere, we make it so easy because then we kind of go along. What's wrong, babykins? What's wrong with mommy's baby? And the kid's about 15 or 16 years old. What's wrong with mommy's baby? Well, I mean, the whole family suffers. So you set an atmosphere up by allowing, by being passive. Or maybe you are aggressive and you just say, hey, I believe the kid should put on high heels and lipstick and so on when they're 10 years old. And they're chomping around. Huh? Come on, folks. Somebody has to take charge. But nobody's guilty. Oh, the world today. When I was a child, we never got by with that. Why? Because your parents were on the ball. Or maybe they weren't. I mean, if one man suffers, we all suffer. I think we all have to share the guilt of that, don't we? We helped either passively or actively to make them what they are. Oh me, oh my, oh me. And you know, the whole thing here, folks, is when we get the gist of this, it'll turn your life around and you can have joy unspeakable and full of plenty if you are only involved, I mean, with everybody in some small way, and you got compassion and love for people in some small way, and you can understand when they fall and they have problems and so on like that, and you reach out. Well, even though we know all that, we still continue like the long robes of long ago. I mean, going along with this terrible lie year after year, we persist in this age-old lie. I mean, we are moved, I believe, by the very same motives that actuated those very priests. Well, anyway, closing here, why did they speak to Judas in this way? When Judas came to them, a very broken man, to confess his guilt, not only were they not concerned, they took sort of a weird delight in his misery. We could care less. Do you understand? It's your affair and not ours. Now, come on. You know what else that they had in their reply? And I'm saying this because I see it down here and I see it all over in these places. They had contempt in their reply. Having made a fool of Judas, having bought him, having paid him, they now felt at liberty to throw him out. Isn't it funny? But when you buy somebody, that very person that you buy, you hate them after you bought them. Probably because you could have been that person that was bought. Or you feel dirty around them. Or, hey, I might be the next guy. You can't trust this guy. You want to get rid of him. We don't share any of their guilt. I remember a girl in high school. And she was a pretty thing. And she was about, I think, 14 or 15 years old, and a married man got a hold of her, and he's, I love you. I love you. You know. Well, a little later on, she became pregnant, and this is years ago. And when she told him, he said, well, it's not our affair in the presence of his wife. It's yours. And she left, and then she went and told her friends. And sad to say, her friends felt the same way. And she ended up a couple of nights later killing herself. And her note says, you know, I can't bear the guilt. I'm so sorry. Will you please forgive me? But see, it was nobody's business. No, I'm sorry.
I don't want to get involved. No, no. Oh, God, no. Hey, just leave me out of this. It's not my affair. It's none of my business. Oh, and what have we reaped out of that kind of an atmosphere? I never even knew about it till after the fact, but you know, I even felt guilty. Why didn't I know? Huh? Why didn't I know? But anyway, going on and finishing, these priests and scribes spoke in contempt. And I think along with their contempt, they had a note of superiority. We can do that with people too, can't we? We have that note of superiority. It says in the Bible that the poor are despised. How many know the Bible tells the truth? They are despised, believe me. So not only did they have contempt, they had a note of superiority. And they thought something like this. Well, you know, you or probably said it. You contemptible traitor. We used you, sure we used you, but we would have never done such a damnable things ourselves. No, no, we are decent, we are respectable. But with you, you are utterly disgusting. You are utterly hopeless. Get out of my sight. I was reading this, and these guys pop into my mind quite often, like Gary Hart. All of a sudden, it was nobody else's affair. It was his. Or Oliver North, or Jim Baker, or President Nixon. Nobody can relate to those people. I wonder how God's going to judge all that. When he tells us not to judge, when he tells us about casting the first stone. But I think the very supreme thing in all of this, I think they just wanted to save themselves the trouble. They didn't want to hear about it. They wanted to lay it to rest. They'd, hey, just get it out of our face. Put it behind us. You see that a lot of times in political things. They simply did not want to be bothered. Judas was suffering and they didn't want to listen. They didn't want to get under his load. And it says about them that they made loads too heavy for any man to bear and they wouldn't lift one finger to help. And here was a man that had a load that they created. Either they did it passively or actively. We don't always know that, but we do know that they were at fault and they wouldn't give one finger to help this poor man. And also, I believe they didn't want to feel mean and ashamed for having thrown him aside. They wanted to forget it all and go on with life with no guilt, saying long prayers out in the streets to be heard of men, the Bible says. And so they told Judas, it is your affair and not ours. I think we all shrink from the cross, don't we? Well, what is it to bear a cross? The man asked me the other day. It's to take up your brother's burden. And I think too few of us are willing to do this. I think that we shirk the cross. And I think we want to get away from it. We want to set it aside. And still let him that is without sin cast the first stone at the priests. Personally, folks, my realization of my own selfishness gives me a paralyzed arm. I'm not going to cast no stones. Too many times I've held back, saying it's none of my business. What was the outcome of this whole thing? The outcome was that Judas came to these religious leaders because he was desperate and he needed help so badly. They gave him indifference and they gave him contempt and they refused to get under his load. And how did it work and how does it work now? I'll tell you, folks, we can't afford that attitude in today's economy as it couldn't be afforded then. We can no longer shrug our shoulders. We can't do that. Because in doing so, we miss the high privilege of serving Jesus Christ. And in the end, we'll surely destroy ourselves. Look at the world right now. He that seeketh to save his life will lose it. And we're losing it day by day by non-caring. We have one law that takes care of all the laws in the Bible, all the Ten Commandments, and that's the law of love. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of love. If we refuse to give, we refuse to live. There is no living without giving. Christ lived that way as an example unto us, and every man's need was his need and is his need. Every man's pain is his pain, and the Bible says that he died that we might live. And the very things he died for are the things we're to be living by. And so now we have a mess here in this world because we're just not following those simple principles of caring and sharing and seeing ourselves in another person's plight. Can I see myself in Judas? Oh, yes. Can you see yourself in Judas? I can. I can. And I think in some small way we'll all find ourselves in these people that surround the cross. It's such an easy thing to do. All we have to do is change direction. If you're listening to this on the radio tape, just change your direction. Start to care just a little bit. Well, that's my message for today. Is there anyone in here today that doesn't know Jesus as their personal Savior?